You are Locked On Sooners, your daily Oklahoma Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
From the G Family Performance Center in Edmond, Oklahoma, welcome to another episode of the Locked On Sooners podcast. My name is Eric G., your gracious and humble host. Want to thank you for making us a part of your day. This was supposed to be the Saturday podcast, and I had stayed up to like 3 o'clock in the morning doing it. But the thoughts were all over the place at 3 o'clock this morning. And more than anything, I want to give you a good product that you feel like you're getting something out of. So I've scoped things down, I've honed in on the opinions, and we're going to give it to you straight coming up here on Locked On Sooners. Coming up in segment number one, we will talk about Kyler Murray, and I have got myself almost talked into the fact that the Oakland Raiders would be the best landing spot for Kyler Murray. And if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, then you know I've been against that. But I'm going to play devil's advocate to myself and tell you why the Raiders would be the best landing spot for Kyler Murray and why it could be an unmitigated disaster if Kyler Murray ends up going to the Arizona Cardinals. Also in segment number one, we'll talk about the Buffalo Bills being the best landing spot for Marquise Brown and why, if he stays healthy, he'll have a real opportunity to win Rookie of the Year honors. In segment number two, A.D. Miller coming back to OU says an awful lot about Lincoln Riley and how he feels about his players and why parents can trust Lincoln Riley when he goes into their home more so than they can any other coaches. I'll explain that, and we'll get into some shady things with the transfer portal that if you're a parent, you might want to be on the lookout for and really talk to your kids about if they've got the opportunity to play college football. And then lastly, we'll discuss the OU men's basketball team who are getting another shot at West Virginia, whom they're 1-1 against. Terrible game against Kansas State. And I'll tell you why that game was bad for my eyes, despite what Robbie Hummel said about OU's effort. I'll tell you why I disagreed with him and why I'm looking at this team now and I figured out their identity. It took us this long into the season. It took us up to the last game of the season to figure out OU men's basketball identity, but I figured it out yesterday. Something clicked, so I'll tell you about that. My name is Eric G., and I am a credentialed member of the media. I've been covering OU for 5 years. I also run a website called Sooner Maven. That would be collegesportsmaven.io/Oklahoma. And what else do you need to know? I work for 1340 The Game. I'm the co-host of Game Day Saturday with Randy Renner. And then lastly, this was supposed to be the Saturday podcast, but at 3 o'clock in the morning, the thoughts weren't as coherent as they are now. So, if you're catching up on the podcast, I guess it really doesn't matter. But if you were expecting it yesterday, I apologize for that, although we do have an episode of Locked On Thunder available for you. So here we go. It would be an unmitigated disaster. Now, granted, remember, I'm playing devil's advocate to myself here. Now, it would be an unmitigated disaster if Kyler Murray ended up going to the Arizona Cardinals and playing for Cliff Kingsbury. Because Cliff Kingsbury is an overrated coach that doesn't deserve the position that he has now. Now, remember, playing devil's advocate. Here's the reason why I say that. There's the opinion. Here's the reason why I'm saying what I'm saying. First and foremost, if you are the Arizona Cardinals, and you're taking a look at what Patrick Mahomes accomplished in Kansas City, and you're saying, well, I want to get the guy that coached him. I want to get the guy that developed Patrick Mahomes. Then you need to go get Patrick Mahomes' dad. You need to go get Patrick Mahomes' quarterback's coach coming up through high school, not Cliff Kingsbury. And really, if we're being honest about Patrick Mahomes, a lot of what Patrick Mahomes does is not things you can teach. And I'm not talking about strictly athletic ability and him being able to throw the ball sidearm and hit a receiver. I'm talking about the ability to read defenses. I'm talking about the ability to improv and make things happen on the field. Those are things you can't teach. You can show a guy on film where particular players are going to line up. You can show them how he's supposed to read a defense. You can have him draw it out on the dry erase board, but till he actually does it, then you don't know if he can or not. And some guys are great film guys. Some guys are great studiers, but they can't make it happen on the field. And ultimately, those guys end up becoming coaches. Bill Belichick really can't teach what Tom Brady does. He can help Brady, but he can't teach Brady work ethic, which is unmatched. If you read any books about the Patriots, it's unmatched compared to anybody in the National Football League now. He can't control how much Brady is going to study, and he can't control Brady making the throws. So in a lot of times, when we are looking at coach-quarterback relationships, we're giving way too much credit to the coach for taking a naturally gifted, talented guy who's willing to put in the time and then giving the coach all the credit for making that guy better than what he actually is. When it comes to Cliff Kingsbury, if you are a pro, if you're a veteran on the Arizona Cardinals, what is there about this guy that makes you think he can actually get it done in the NFL? If you look at his career throughout Texas Tech, one, Patrick Mahomes is the only guy that he's really had go to the NFL and be successful. So you have to ask yourself, is that an anomaly? Or does Cliff Kingsbury really know what he's doing? And if he was such a guru and he was such a great coach, then why did he not fare any better in college than he did? Why did he get fired at Texas Tech? And the best job he could get after that was to simply be an offensive coordinator at USC. Not that that's a bad job, but you would think that a guy that would get an NFL head job would certainly be able to land a college head job, and that was not the case for Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury is a guy that always finished middle of the road in the Big 12 and struggled against the likes of TCU and Oklahoma State and Baylor and Kansas State. I mean, let alone Oklahoma. He was struggling with the programs that weren't near as premier as Oklahoma was. Now he's going to come in and take on Pete Carroll and a Seahawks team that he has stabilized through all their ups and downs over the past year. As the Seahawks were kind of going through a revamping, he's got them stabilized. He's going to come in and be successful against the Los Angeles Rams, who just went to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff. Yeah, none of this is starting to add up. This isn't Chip Kelly, who came in after four consecutive BCS appearances and taking Auburn down to the wire in the national championship game, getting this job. This is a middle-of-the-road Big 12 coach getting this job. And now, if you are the GM at Arizona, which is what, Steve Keim, there's a lot of pressure on you to make this work. There's a lot of pressure on Cliff Kingsbury. And Cliff Kingsbury isn't going to get the same treatment afforded to him that a guy like Jimmy Johnson did, what, 30 years ago, coming out of Miami to Dallas, where Jerry Jones just believed in him and said, hey, take it and run, and we'll build this thing together. No, you've got 3 years tops. Not to mention the Cardinals, you may not have 3 years because they just fired a guy after one. So if you're Kyler Murray, do you really want to go into that situation? And the answer to that, to me, would be no. And granted, I have stumped and believed and still believe ultimately it would be a great fit for Kyler Murray. But no, the Oakland Raiders is where you want to go if you are Kyler Murray. Because if we are talking about a guy who actually develops quarterbacks and makes them better, John Gruden is that guy. The best example of that is Rich Gannon, who was a journeyman quarterback. And up until 1999, when Rich Gannon landed with the Oakland Raiders, he had never been to a Pro Bowl. He had never been an All-Pro. And with John Gruden, he became second-team All-Pro, and he went to four Pro Bowls. John Gruden turned him into a guy that went to a Super Bowl. When John Gruden went to Tampa Bay, he won with Brad Johnson, who wasn't a whole heck of a lot better, probably isn't any better than Rich Gannon. He knows how to develop quarterbacks. The Raiders just signed Antonio Brown, and I love Kyler Murray, but there are times we saw this year where Grant Calcaterra and CeeDee Lamb in particular had to bail Kyler Murray out of some pretty questionable throws. I also think Charleston Rambo did it a couple of times as well. So now you've signed Antonio Brown. He can certainly make Kyler Murray look better. You've got Gruden, who does a great job of actually taking these guys, making them better than what they are, has a track record of making them better than what they are. You've got three first-round picks. There's a guy over there in Marcel Aitman who you should be familiar with from his time at Oklahoma State, and I would think you would get along with him pretty good and be able to develop chemistry. Plus, the spotlight is not going to be as white hot on you because of the situation in Oakland where their fans are probably not real concerned about this team being good. In fact, they would hope the team is bad, and I don't know how much they're paying attention because they're leaving after this year. It's all about Vegas for them. So if I'm a beat writer for the Oakland Raiders, I don't know how interested I am in to continue reporting on this team and keeping my audience emotionally involved, or if I'm doing a podcast or a radio show. So how much time am I really investing in Kyler Murray? No, you can probably learn and grow there a little bit better. All eyes will still be on you. It just won't be as intense from a local coverage because the Raiders are about to say au revoir to Oakland. So I've almost got myself talked into it. And then I will tell you that I keep coming back to the relationship between Mike Mayock and John Gruden just seems too volatile. And then eventually things will end up blowing up in Oakland. And then you've got Al Davis's kid running the team. But yeah, if you wanted to make an argument for Kyler Murray going to Oakland, certainly it's there. Marquise Brown should definitely go to the Buffalo Bills. Why do I say that? Because originally I was thinking Buffalo was not a place you would want to go if you were Marquise Brown. But first and foremost, you've got a young quarterback in Josh Allen, whom you can grow with. You walk into a situation where you are the premier receiver. Right away, you're the premier receiver in Buffalo. And if you stay healthy, you're taking on defenses that were 21st, 23, and I think 28th respectively. They were all, none of them were higher than 21. I'm probably screwing up the exact numbers, and I had this written down last night, but the Miami Dolphins had the 21st defense against the pass last year. New England was like 23. So you should be able to come in and start racking up the numbers and generate a lot of excitement around Buffalo, and you being a guy who, aside from Kyler Murray, might be the most exciting player in the draft, can certainly make some noise if you develop chemistry with Josh Allen right away. Plus, they've got LeSean McCoy, so the running game ought to be better than what it was last year, you would think. I don't know. Shady McCoy's had his issues there. But I like the idea of Marquise Brown going to Buffalo and being able to torch some of those defenses in the AFC East, give that city a lift, sort of in the way that Baker Mayfield did Cleveland, and get himself the Rookie of the Year. Because with Kyler, as much as he may fall into that category, or Dwayne Haskins, both of them are going to go through some bumps and bruises. And if Haskins goes to the Giants and he gets the start right away, he'll be successful quicker than Kyler will, because they've got more weapons around them, a more stable offensive line. But still, he's not going to be as spectacular as Marquise Brown. And we all know that voters love that spectacular player. This is the Locked On Sooners podcast. I'm Eric G. Well, bringing back A.D. Miller says about Lincoln Riley and why it's going to affect recruiting for years to come. That's next.
You are Locked On Sooners, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Locked On Sooners podcast. I'm Eric G. Thank you very much for allowing me to have my coffee. I would love for you to listen to this in your car, whether you're going to work or to church or you're picking up the kids. All you have to do is tell your smart device to play the Locked On Sooners podcast, and it'll do it for you. It's that simple. You're in an on-demand world. Everything is on demand, except your wife. Your wife is never on demand. You're on demand for her. So take advantage of it. Siri is the one woman that will actually do what you tell her to do. So tell her to play the Locked On Sooners podcast anytime in your car. Most of these shows are about 30 minutes or less. So, A.D. Miller coming back to OU, spurning Illinois, deciding that he wanted to finish what he started, as Lincoln Riley put it. What this says about Lincoln Riley, the most important message in this entire situation with A.D. Miller, is that Lincoln Riley actually values relationships with kids, and that he doesn't see them strictly as commodities. And that's very important. If you look at A.D. Miller's numbers, he's really not contributed at all during his time here at OU. He's a guy that came in with some fanfare, but ultimately it hasn't manifested itself out on the field. And while OU might need some depth at receiver, Lincoln Riley's also bringing in some guys who were very highly recruited in that new Wave 19 class. So how much depth do you really need? Especially when you've got guys like Carson Meyer and Grant Calcaterra, and then you've got Charleston Rambo starting to contribute. There's enough talent there for Jalen Hurts or Tanner Mordecai, if we're saying there's an actual quarterback battle. there's enough talent there for them to be successful, even if you are a little thin, that a guy like A.D. Miller is just really one more body there that if somebody goes down, you can kind of plug him in, but he's never going to be, unless something dramatic happens, A.D. Miller is never going to be a guy that ultimately contributes to this offense so much. He's never going to be kind of your go-to guy. He's your second, your third receiver when you're looking at guys to pass to on any particular play. But what this says about Lincoln Riley is that he valued that relationship, because in the transfer portal, when a guy decides to transfer, okay, and decides to put his name in the portal, a coach can rip that scholarship away from him. It's very simple. Hey, you're entering the transfer portal. You don't want to be here. All right, well, your scholarship's gone. Good luck. Hopefully you'll find some place where you fit in. But Lincoln Riley welcomed A.D. Miller back with open arms, even though it looked like he was hitting towards Illinois. He could have just told him, hey, look, man, tough luck. I've got guys here that are, you know, behind you, but you know what? You know, I've got guys here behind you, I've recruited guys. Thanks for coming and working hard, but ultimately, I don't need you. Now, granted, you can always make the argument, well, Eric, you just said they need depth. And if guys get hurt, it's better to have this scholarship kid than not have him. True. And that could fall back into the commodity category. But if I'm a parent looking at this situation, looking at a deal where a kid wasn't really happy with the playing time that he was getting at OU, wasn't feeling that he was connecting with the coaches, even told the coaches and everybody else in college football that he was willing to leave and put himself out on the market, and the coach was kind enough and strong enough to say, hey, you're always welcome here. Those aren't words, and the actions met with those words. When Lincoln Riley comes into my house and tells me that he's going to take care of my kid, based on this whole A.D. Miller situation, I'm buying into it. 100% lock, stock, and barrel. And if my son wants to go to OU because this coach has shown he's genuine, where a lot of other ones have shown they're not, and this transfer portal, we'll talk about this in a second, has a tendency to get really dangerous for kids, then you know what? Lincoln, you got my son. I'm willing, if he wants to go there, I'm willing to support him and let him be there 4 years. It's just another thing that Lincoln Riley does so well when dealing with parents and kids, and he's a genuine guy. There are a lot of coaches. There are a lot of coaches out there that, in my opinion, are just used car salesmen that you really can't trust. Les Miles to me comes across as one of those guys. I don't necessarily know him. But he's always come across to me that way. And just talking with a couple of guys that I worked with, one that played for Les Miles, they always gave me the impression that Les cared more about himself than the kids, and it was more about his reputation. At times I kind of thought Bob was that way. You know, Bob was so much not genuine or a car salesman, but I just thought Bob was just a bottom line guy. Ultimately, it was just about results. If you can get results, great. If you can't, then that's just it. Doesn't mean I don't like you, but I really don't have any use for you. Lincoln, there's a genuineness to him. And I think part of it is because he's young and he hasn't been so beaten down by college football and boosters and people like me taking shots at him, that he can still have that enthusiasm. He can still feel that way towards kids. And when it comes to this transfer portal, if you've got a kid in college or about to go to college and they're thinking, well, hey, this is a way for me to constantly keep myself in play, where if I'm not happy, I can find that perfect situation. Because a coach can pull a scholarship at your current school when you enter, what you have to watch out for is that, let's just say it's a situation where maybe Mike Gundy likes you, okay, and you're third, fourth on the depth chart at any particular position, and through back channels or whatever, it gets to you that Oklahoma State would be interested in you. And you know that, you decide to enter the transfer portal, and you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, even if it doesn't work out with Oklahoma State, if they want me, especially if you're a receiver, then somebody else is probably going to want me too. Well, the scholarship gets pulled, and you may find out that your choices aren't near as good as you thought they were, and your best situation is still being at the school you were, which is probably the case for A.D. Miller, because Illinois is a hell of a step down from Oklahoma. And it's certainly better to be, if you want to go to the NFL, I would think, besides just getting playing time and getting to show your skills, Now, you're the third, fourth guy on the depth chart in Oklahoma. It's a lot better than being first in Illinois because Oklahoma doesn't recruit garbage, and receiver-wise, they recruit guys that go and play and contribute in the NFL. So if you're getting beat out by them, and I'm an NFL coach, I'm like, well, hey, he's getting beat out by other kids in Oklahoma. How bad can he actually be? Let's take a look at him at Pro Day. Let's take a look at him at the Combine, and then let's decide then. This is the Locked On Sooners podcast. I'm Eric G. Coming up next here, we'll close things out, and I figured out what the identity is of this OU men's basketball team. You're not going to like it, but the truth is the truth, and we'll talk about it next.
You are Locked On Sooners, your daily Oklahoma Sooners podcast.
This is the Locked On Sooners podcast. I'm Eric G. I want to thank you for listening to us today, this morning, this afternoon, whenever you're listening. And remember to listen in your car. It's always the best way to listen because we can get you to work, from work, taking the kids around on a date. Listen to this podcast on a date. I'll help you. I'll help you with that date. Probably not. Actually, if you listen to me on a date, probably wouldn't be a bad thing. So listen to me with your friends. Hey, and we can just have that one-on-one intimate relationship. It's the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. The OU men's basketball team is front runners. That's what their identity is. And these last three games have proven it. Actually, the last two games really cemented it. Because against Kansas, at one point, you were hitting 60% from the field in the first half. And as we saw in that game, when OU was hitting their shots at 60%, they were actually playing tough defense. And they were more active in the zone, and they were cutting off passing lanes, and they weren't letting Kansas get into the paint, and they were forcing Kansas out of their comfort zone to take a whole bunch of outside shots from three, and Kansas is not a good three-point shooting team. And I dare say that if OU wasn't making their shots, Kansas would have had an easier time in the first half getting into the paint. It took Kansas until probably about the 18 to 16 minute mark of the second half to really start attacking the paint. And as a result, you saw them tie Oklahoma in that half. But give a lot of credit to OU for putting the pressure on Kansas and making them feel uncomfortable. Yesterday versus K-State, as the shots were not falling for Oklahoma, and as they were not able to keep Kansas State off the offensive boards, and they were giving them second looks, and you saw the shots start to fall for Kansas State when they would hit a timely three, then you saw the defense start to break down. And yo, God bless Robbie Hummel for saying that OU was playing hard and the effort was there and that K-State was on another level. There were more than a couple of times where I saw Stokes get into the lane. And one time, excusable, maybe everybody's out of position. Two times, three times when everybody's out of position. No, that's just lack of effort and you not making a commitment to get into the paint and stop them on defense. The only way OU makes a run in the NCAA tournament is sound defense. You've got to play sound defense. You've got to play that zone to as close to perfection as you can. You've got to use those long arms. And you have got to force turnovers. You've got to be active with the hands. You can't let too many guys get by you. It's going to happen, but you've got to be active with your hands. You've got to start fast break opportunities. That's how OU wins in advances, because the shooting isn't there. Yes, it was against Kansas and West Virginia, and it'll probably be against West Virginia again on Wednesday night because West Virginia can't defend the three, but ultimately, it's not your bread and butter. And if you put yourself in a hole, there's just not enough firepower on this team for you to come back. The one thing that I thought they did well yesterday was make sure that that ball got into Christian Doolittle's hands, because right now he's your ride or die guy. You're going to ride with him or you're going to die with him. But ultimately, he has to be the guy that takes control of this team and puts them on his back. Can't be Christian James too inconsistent. Can't be Brady Manick because he's too inconsistent. Yesterday, by the way, BS call. Brady Manick should not have been called for a flagrant foul. It was as close to a flop as you're going to see kind of in that situation where the elbow went back on the player that he was getting position on and he put it into the neck and the guy exaggerated his movement. BS call, but hey, you got a game against West Virginia. Most likely you're going to the NCAA tournament. So that's got to get behind you real quick. So when you take the floor Wednesday night, you're not thinking about that. No, I'm Brady Manick. He'll put it behind him. But for OU, it really is all about defense, and that's what Lon Kruger has got to stress over these next few days and getting ready for the Big 12 tournament and then hopefully, most likely, the NCAA tournament. We'll be back later on today to talk a little bit more about OU men's basketball and really the Big 12 tournament itself. And also, what are the fallout of Charlie Casserly's comments? What was the fallout on that as far as how it affected Kyler Murray? And is Charlie Casserly changing his tune? We'll tell you about that. And until then, may God bless you and your family. Everybody love everybody. Peace, love, and Boomer Sooner.
You are Locked On Sooners, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell Alexa or Google to play podcast Locked On. Don't worry, I won't finish. You get the idea.